I was a latecomer to opera, not really opera phobic, more like opera disinterested. I did attend a production of La Traviata with my mother-in-law about 40 years ago, but didn't get hooked. Then Madama Butterfly with a friend about 25 years ago, and found it somewhat enjoyable, but it wasn't until I discovered Met at the Movies that I found them thrilling and really began to look forward to the productions. I'd been holding on to the August 2018 Next Avenue article, How You Can Overcome Operaphobia, filing it under my Might Use It in a Silver Threads Program Sometime folder. The time arrived with a May 2020 Next Avenue article. During quarantine, this couple's love song continues. It was published in my Research into Seniors and Opera produced some delightful stories. The East Hampton Star offers From the Army to a Love of Opera, and the COVID pandemic has motivated some talented singers to serenade residents with singing telegrams at senior homes from parking lots and lawns. I will begin with The Love Story of Emilio and Deborah Moscoso by Julie Fitzinger, published in May of 2020. Music has always been center stage with Emilio and Deborah Moscoso, a beat behind their love story, a theme of their family life, and the melody they rely on during challenging times. Music even floated beyond the four walls of their home. Over the years, Emilio's rich voice has become well known to neighbors who have enjoyed hearing him sing in the backyard as he did chores. Although now life has resulted in fewer of those opportunities. While spending time in quarantine in their Boston area home due to the pandemic, the couple must venture out 3 times a week for Emilio's kidney dialysis. He has been fighting kidney disease since 1988 and has had 2 kidney transplants. The treatments wear him out, but according to Samuel, his dad, 79, continues to find joy and pleasure in life. He's heroic, I think. He's the most positive and peaceful man and never complains, said Samuel, a musician and songwriter who divides his time between Los Angeles and Boston. Like many teaching artists these days, Deborah, 72, a music teacher and choir director, has taken to the video conference service Zoom, which keeps her connected to her students. But staying connected to music is what helps her cope. Music can be a positive and uplifting experience, she said. Singing reminds people to breathe. In fact, it was music that breathed life into the romance of Emilio and Deborah, who will celebrate their 50th wedding anniversary this year. The pair met and fell in love during the summer of 1967 at Quisisana Resort on Lake Kezar in Center Lovell, Maine. Deborah, then a Maine resident, worked in the laundry. Emilio, born and raised in Panama, had already gotten a history degree from a college in South Dakota. From there, he moved to Boston and received a second bachelor's degree and a master's in vocal performance at the Boston Conservatory. A summer job as a kitchen manager brought Emilio to Quisisana. As things grew serious, the couple traveled to Panama so Emilio could introduce Deborah to his family. They already had plans to wed, but in order to expedite the renewal of Emilio's immigrant status, they married in June 1970, 2 months after arriving in Panama. They had a more formal ceremony in October 1970 in the United States. From there, Emilio, a tenor, began pursuing his dream of becoming an opera singer. In 1972, the couple moved to Oberhausen, Germany, where Emilio had successfully auditioned for a small company, Theater Oberhausen. And while Deborah hadn't necessarily intended on pursuing a music career, she was an English teacher, but played the piano and loved to sing. She ended up singing in the chorus at Theater Oberhausen. After they moved from Theater Oberhausen, there was a period of time when they belonged to separate opera companies on other sides of the country. Emilio sang for the Opernhaus Passau in Passau, and Deborah, a lyric soprano, was a member of the opera company Wuppertaler Open House in Wuppertal. The towns were almost 7-hour drives apart, a trip which became harder to manage after Julia was born in 1977. Samuel came along in 1979. My mom only made one trip to visit Emilio for the premiere of Andrea Chenier, where he had the lead. Samuel said, adding that his father had been gone for 4 months due to his rehearsal schedule. Before moving back to the States in 1980, Moscoscos performed at a special show in Emilio's native Panama. In 1979, the pair sang Puccini, Bizet, Mozart, and more at the National Theater there with the National Symphonic Orchestra. Emilio still recalls that there were posters plastered all over Panama City promoting their show. He credits his mother, who was well connected in the government and arts community in Panama at the time, for helping make their memorable concert possible, an event he still thinks about to this day. Currently, Emilio not only thinks about great performances, he listens to and watches famous tenors on his phone while he is receiving dialysis. Caruso, Björling, Kaufman, Juan Diego Flores, he said, listing some of his favorites. For Deborah, in addition to her teaching, she is also singing on her own. Right now, it's Clara Schumann's 6 Songs for the Queen of Denmark, she said. I like to work on songs to help keep my voice agile. When asked about the joyful musical memories that she and Emilio have shared over the years, Deborah's voice fills with emotion. I'm just really lucky. I didn't set out to do this opera, but it just took hold of me, and I feel very blessed, she said. Music has given them both such beautiful connections and brought people into our lives who are so important, Deborah added. With that, Deborah took a step toward their piano, gently hit a key, and turned to Emilio. They clasped hands and began to sing a duet they had performed many times over the years, including at Julia's wedding. O Soave Fanciulla from La Boheme by Puccini. The women in Puccini's operas all have such courage. They inspire me, Deborah said after the piece was finished. I want to embrace that same spirit of courage in my life. Next, from the East Hampton Star, From the Army to a Love of Opera by Irene Silverman, published December 5, 2019. Anthony Lombardo was in the Army in 1952, stationed in Germany and sitting in a restaurant with a friend, when they overheard the people at the next table discussing Verdi's Othello. Mr. Lombardo, who was 87 on November 23rd, remembers it well. I never felt stupid in my life, he said, but opera? Shakespeare? And I said, what are they talking about? And my friend said, aha, they're just being pedantic. And I said, what's that mean? He went back to barracks and right then made a decision. I said, I'm going to college. I'm going to be intellectual. I'm going to listen to music like the rich people do. College didn't happen, but Mr. Lombardo is nothing if not a quick study. During a lively conversation at the East Hampton Town Senior Citizen Center, he said he had taught himself Morse code before he became a Boy Scout, and over his long life, what with one thing after another, maybe make that one and another girlfriend, he's picked up Spanish, German, Italian, and French, starting back at Seward Park High School on the Lower East Side. She was Puerto Rican, he remembered, smiling, and would take him to parties and dance halls where no one spoke English. Then in Germany, we'd treat the girls to beer and schnitzel once a month. One girl kept hitting, is that the word, on me? The German girl I dated, more than dated, I grew up there as a man, would go see plays in German, and I really felt I wanted to understand. They were together for almost a year. By the time they broke up, he had become fluent in High German. She spoke it like a crystal chandelier. French, he taught himself. Once you speak German, Italian, and Spanish, French is a piece of cake. If he doesn't have a doctor's appointment or is away from town for one or another reason, Mr. Lombardo stands up on Monday after lunch at the senior center before an eager audience of 6 or 8 and plays for them one of the operas from his collection, which now numbers over 100, on vinyl, VHS, DVD, CD, tape, and what have you. He is recovering from a recent stroke. Before it happened, he would hold those Monday presentations like clockwork. Lately, it's been a bit hit or miss. He also invites people to hear and or see opera on Wednesday nights at his East Hampton apartment and makes them a pot of pasta to top off the occasion. Over the phone, he gave an example of what he might say to them beforehand, rattling off, in Italian, the villainous Scarpio's aria, forgive my pronunciation here, Gai mi chiedon vino. Yes, they say I am vino, to the beautiful Tosca. Then I tell them what it means and why it's important. The first opera he ever owned, Puccini's Madama Butterfly, was a birthday present soon after his army discharge. It was in a box. I didn't open it right away. I didn't know opera yet, and at the time I spoke only Spanish and German. There was a book inside, though, with a translation of the Italian libretto, and eventually he read it and listened to the LP records. I cried all through. Out of the vinyl came the acting. He went out to buy another. The expensive records were on the Angel label. I bought Lucia di Lammermoor with Callas, and I could picture everything. I was hooked. Born in Sicily and brought to New York soon after he could walk, Mr. Lombardo never learned to speak his native language until opera came along. His family, friends, and relatives all spoke broken English, he said, the faster to embrace the new country. Father was a bricklayer. Every Friday night, he and his friends would go out drinking. They'd all get drunk. One Friday, they all went and joined the army together. They loved America. After leaving the service, Mr. Lombardo lost little time making good on his promises to himself. With a thirst for knowledge and a talent for drawing, he took classes to learn to be a draftsman. His language skills stood him in good stead. Hired by a Manhattan furniture company, he started out by making detailed illustrations for cabinet makers to follow. The subcontracting cabinet makers loved me and loved that I spoke Italian. The painters were Puerto Rican. We spoke Spanish. The upholsterer was an Ashkenazi Jew. He spoke German. When we met, I spoke to him in High German, and he hugged me. After a while, he said, he fell in with a decorator who introduced him around to higher-ups in the various trades, and he became a designer of fine furniture, tables, chairs, cabinetry, bedroom sets, on up to entire paneled rooms, and even, for the New York developer Saul Goldman, the lobbies of buildings. His son and I became good friends. We both like the Spanish pianist Alicia de la Roca. Bardo's designs took off like wildfire. Examples can still be seen on Google, and the young soldier who had promised himself he'd be rich someday wound up owning a company or two of his own and building a house in Amagansett. Over the years, he had 2 marriages, 2 daughters, and 2 divorces. All the psychiatrists, doctors, dentists, they paid in cash, he said, and with the cash, I won over $40,000 at the track. 2 years in a row, my clothes were made by Oleg Cassini. I never did a room for less than $100,000. When I got a computer, I got more operas. Now I'm getting some not-too-popular ones, Faust, The Flying Dutchman, and some biblical ones I didn't know, Nabucco, Samson and Delilah. About 30 years ago, Mr. Lombardo became a patron of the Metropolitan Opera. I wore a tuxedo when I'd go to the Met openings, he said. Then in 2003 came the war in Iraq. I had 2 companies. I was making lots of money. But when there's a war, the rich people buy nothing luxury, no fancy clothes. They only buy gold. So half the carpet people, the fabric people, everyone in the D&D building went out of business. I was running out of money. I sold my antique cars. I kept refinancing the house. Now I'm at the end of my rope. Where am I going to live? Then he heard about Windmill Village, East Hampton Town's first affordable housing complex. In 2009, his application was approved. Now Mr. Lombardo drives a 1995 Cadillac Fleetwood, his last remaining car. The license plate says Opera Car, and when he goes to see the Met in HD operas at Guildhall, they make sure I get a parking spot. If after those stories you are still lukewarm on opera, here's How You Can Overcome Operaphobia by Patricia Corgan, August 2018. You may think you know nothing of opera, but Bugs Bunny introduced many of us to it. Actually, it was Elmer Fudd, stalking Bugs, who sings Kill the Wabbit to the soaring music of Wagner's Ride of the Valkyries in one cartoon. Bugs also starred in The Rabbit of Seville, featuring Rossini's opera music. Remember comic Adam Sandler as opera man, dressed in a flowing cape and waving a white handkerchief as he delivered the news on Saturday Night Live in the early 1990s? Then along came Jonathan Larson's poignant Broadway musical, Rent, which he based on Puccini's opera, La Bohème. Many of you know all this, and you still suffer from operaphobia? Well, good news. Opera companies and adult education programs around the country are here to help. Fear of opera is fear of the unknown, said Ruth Knott, education director of the San Francisco Opera. The fear, which is prevalent, comes from not having experienced opera, and maybe from growing up in a family where no one had experienced it. Yet opera can be so many things to different people. Entertainment, a way of learning about history, or even an escape into a new world. I know fear of opera. For decades, I avoided opera, one friend counseled. You like musical theater? Opera is just musical theater in a foreign language. That still didn't win me over. Another friend tried a different approach. During a picnic in a park, he walked me through the libretto of Madama Butterfly as the music played on a small tape recorder. Then he took me to see the opera, and I got it. I not only got it, I loved every minute of it. Soon after, I signed up for an opera appreciation class through OASIS, a lifelong learning organization based in St. Louis. Led by a knowledgeable opera enthusiast, the class featured stories, history, film clips, recordings, vintage posters, and even great gossip about the famous opera singers. To wit, legendary tenor Enrico Caruso was in San Francisco on April 18, 1906, the morning of that city's historic earthquake. Touring with the Metropolitan Opera Company, he had performed Bizet's Carmen the night before. The quake, estimated at a 7.9 by today's measurements, woke him. In a panic, the superstar told his valet to drag his 54 steamer trunks down the steps and out of the Palace Hotel, which collapsed that afternoon. Caruso escaped on a ferry to Oakland and then caught a train back to New York. So, what are opera companies and adult education programs doing to alleviate the widespread skepticism about a 400-year-old art form that Knott describes as the most creative, all-encompassing art form you can find? Well, the answer is plenty. San Francisco Opera and the company's Opera Guild reach out to people from cradle to grave, Knott said. Drinks and Drama is an educational program for adults and features an evening of discussion over specialty cocktails that tie into the theme of the next opera production. The Minnesota Opera in Minneapolis offers lectures and classes. Two new classes are about creative aging and participatory art making, said Jamie Andrews, education director at Minnesota Opera. We wanted to provide opportunities for people to experience opera as artists and help them realize it's not a distant, unattainable art form. One class is Voices of Opera, a chorus for adults 55 and older. Participants spend 9 weeks singing opera and even learn some staging. Opera Connections, an 8-week class, explores opera through its stories. We look at the themes and tie them into personal storytelling, Andrews said. Then we contrast our personal stories with what we will see in the opera on stage. Opera San Jose offers a 6-week course on the history of opera for $60. The Dallas Opera teaches Opera 101 on a chatty webpage. The Metropolitan Opera Guild of New York City offers podcasts, tours, and opera-themed travel opportunities. Opera Theater of St. Louis partners with Oasis to offer a docent-led preview of each season. Most companies schedule free talks before each performance, too. If you don't live in a city with an opera company, there are other ways to learn about opera. Oasis serves adult learners of 40 cities. Find out where opera appreciation classes are available where you live. The Osher Foundation supports 120 lifelong learning programs for people 50 and over across the country. Some public libraries offer classes on opera as well. Ask if yours has one scheduled. If not, ask about getting one going. 5 years ago in San Francisco, Larry Oppenheim, a retired computer programmer and oboe player, started a lecture series, Opera for the People, which he presents free in local libraries. Other sources for classes are music schools and college adult education programs. Don't overlook online learning, especially with COVID. The Great Courses list 32 lectures on opera. Another resource is the National Opera Center of America, based in New York City. Also, edX, created by Massachusetts Institute of Technology and Harvard University, has offered free 6-week self-paced courses online for beginners and advanced opera listeners alike. CNN offered this April 2020 article, Opera Company Records Singing Telegrams, by Ryan Bergeron. Opera houses and theaters might be shut down, but the Atlanta Opera is not staying quiet. They are putting their show must go on attitude to good use by gathering their ensemble to help others during the pandemic. Instead of receiving standing ovations from theater crowds, performers are now providing operas for one by recording special singing telegrams for those in need. Artistic director Tomer Zvulin says that once the opera stopped production on shows, they started focusing on how they could help the community. A lot of people right now are lonely or isolated and not able to connect to the ones they love. We were trying to figure out a way to take our unique skills and transpose them, translate them into something that would be meaningful. Members of the Atlanta Opera Chorus and the Atlanta Opera Studio are recording these singing telegrams for those in senior living facilities, healthcare workers, hospital patients, or anyone in need of emotional support. Performers are singing their favorite songs, performing their favorite pieces of music, and are hoping to be able to take requests soon. Zvulin says that the opera's orchestra musicians might soon be taking part in the telegrams as well. He says the telegrams are not only a way to bring some comfort to people, but a way to help the artists as well. We have young artists on staff. We kept them through the crisis. We continue to invest in their education, coaching between classes, language classes, and in exchange, they record these wonderful singing telegrams. Zvulin says that what makes the telegrams so unique is the art form itself. Opera is the most emotional art form that I know. And out of all of the arts, music is the art form that connects emotionally the most to people, more than words, more than anything else. Bernie Goldstein, a resident of the Lembrook Senior Living Facility, was quoted in the group's press release saying, "The telegrams provided these lovely, potent sounds, like hearing a rainbow." And Mary Ruth, an opera volunteer that received a telegram, wrote that listening to her sing did brighten my day and bring many smiles to my face while listening to the message of her song. Those behind the curtain are tailoring their talents in an effort to help as well. The opera's costume shop partnered with Grady Hospital in Atlanta and is now working full-time to produce masks and hospital gowns for the healthcare staff. The masks are designed to be worn over N95 masks to help prolong their usability. As of now, the costume shop has produced about 3,000 to 4,000 masks and is currently producing 190 gowns per week. With staff members from all departments volunteering to help, they are hoping to increase those numbers in the future. The opera company is hoping their creative ways of putting their voices and talents to work inspires others to do the same, because, as the Atlanta Opera costume director Joanna Schmink says, everybody has talents and skills that can be used in these times of crisis, and for some, that can be as simple as sending someone in need a musical pick-me-up. There's something about the human voice and the music that connects in a way that is so direct with people's hearts, and in this day and age, that's exactly what we need, says Zvulin. Now from CBC News, posted April 23, 2020, amateur opera singer Jay LaFlamme is becoming a big hit on the retirement home parking lot circuit. The Armstrong, B.C. resident and soprano member of the Okanagan Symphony Chorus and the Opera Kelowna Chorus has been surprising seniors in the province's interior by serenading them outside the complexes where they are cooped up during the COVID-19 pandemic. It was very nerve-wracking to do it by myself, LaFlamme said in an interview on CBC. After performing for balcony audiences at facilities in Armstrong and Vernon over the weekend, LaFlamme says Interim Artistic Opera Kelowna Director Rosemary Thompson and her team have been working tirelessly to launch a program called Sidewalk Serenades that will involve professional opera singers singing outside of seniors' residences throughout the Okanagan. As a member of Opera Kelowna Chorus, LaFlamme says she decided to go out to get some practice because singing in public makes her nervous, so she took her dog for moral support and set out to spark joy. Her first stop was at Heaton Place in Armstrong, British Columbia, where she said she made sure to sing to both sides of the building so no one was left out. It was so incredibly wow, said LaFlamme, at a bit of a loss for words, but with her voice filled with emotion. At Canterbury Court in Vernon, she performed several songs, including a request for Ave Maria from an enthusiastic audience member in the balcony seats. It's just a super feel-good experience, she said. As I am putting the finishing touches on this program, I am thoroughly enjoying Jay LaFlamme sing Ave Maria. You can too if you put CBC News Jay LaFlamme into your search engine. For another surprise serenade, go to Michael Spires, S-P-Y-R-E-S, Serenade Seniors. For any who might still be operaphobic, they might just be the young opera singers to help you overcome it. Thanks for listening, and until next week, I'm Kathy Van Skoik.